I'm Andy Kahn, and welcome back to another episode of the Jambase Podcast. Jambase is proudly partnered with Osiris Media. Visit Jambase to listen to all of Osiris' podcasts. Jambase and Osiris Media support the nonprofit organization DanceSafe and its efforts to promote health and safety within the electronic music community. We'll hear more from DanceSafe in just a moment. Let's see what's new in the world of Jambase since our last episode. Phish held their annual destination event in Riviera Maya, Mexico. The well-received four-night getaway began with a single welcome set on Thursday, followed by two set shows on Friday and Saturday. Sunday also featured two sets, but the action began earlier in the day, before the sunset. There was a moment during the pause in Divided Sky on Sunday afternoon when guitarist Trey Anastasio gleefully addressed the audience on the beach, seemingly overwhelmed by how good of a time he was having. It sure seemed based on his happiness that this year was a success. Head to Jambase to read recaps of each night, including the set lists, and the skinny breakdown of what was played. Jambase, both online and through our iOS and Android apps, has you covered with the latest tour dates information. Speaking of Trey, his busy schedule keeps getting busier after he added some Oysterhead shows and symphonic concerts, as well as a run of Trey Anastasio Band shows. We've also recently had tour date announcements from Primus, who will perform Rush's album A Farewell to Kings, along with others who announced new tour dates like Tool, Bright Eyes, The Wood Brothers, The National, Pink Talking Fish, The Black Keys, Andy Frasco and the UN, Humphreys McGee, Leftover Salmon, and many others. Jambase is also your source for all things festivals. We've got lineups, daily schedules, ticket links, all the essentials if music fests are part of your plans to go see live music. Now let's get to what's next on this episode of the podcast. We're headed back to sea for an interview with Charlie Hunter aboard Jam Cruise. Charlie met up with Jambase's Scott Bernstein for a musical mentor segment. The pair discussed Charlie's unusual upbringing and how he saw his mother repairing guitars. Hunter traveled as a child and often met other musicians. Early on, he met renowned guitarist Joe Satriani, who became a mentor before rising to his own fame. Charlie also told Scotty about the development of his 8-string guitar, and much more. We'll get to Charlie's chat with Scotty B in just a second. First, here's a word from DanceSafe.
At Osiris, we know that many of our listeners are making it out to live music shows all the time, and we love that. We want to help you connect with the artists and music you love, so those live experiences feel even more meaningful. We also want to make sure music fans stay safe when they're out there having fun. The unregulated sale and use of substances is common at many live music events, and unfortunately, so is drug misrepresentation. We're proud to partner with DanceSafe to raise awareness about this danger. DanceSafe is a nonprofit organization that provides adulterate screening services as well as peer-based education to help support people in making informed decisions about their health and safety. DanceSafe prevents harm from consumption of misidentified substances for thousands of people every year. Here's Mitchell Gomez, Executive Director at DanceSafe.
I think often people think of DanceSafe as just a drug testing group. The reality is we set up at events all the time where we're not able to provide drug checking services. And we're still there providing education, providing other harm reduction materials, and making sure that everybody is getting the information they need to be as safe as they can in whatever choices they make.
When you're out there seeing your favorite artist, dance like nobody's watching, but dance safe because your life may depend on it. To donate or learn more, visit dancesafe.org and look out for their booth at your next music event.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Jambase Podcast. We're on Jam Cruise 18 with Charlie Hunter. How's it going, Charlie?
Good. How about yourself?
I am doing excellent, and this is the last full day of Jam Cruise before we get back to Miami. And how has your trip been so far?
Good. I mean, I had a little bit of the old... took me a while to get my sea legs. I'm a bit of a landlubber, so
sure.
Got pretty seasick for a second day or something like that, but now I'm good.
Excellent, excellent. Did you use any of the wristbands?
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Dramamine that doesn't make you drowsy. Annabelle went out of her way to really hook me up.
So. Excellent, yeah. Annabelle Lukens is, a.k.a. Julie McCoy, the cruise director of our lovely love boat here, and she is the perfect perfect person to go to when anything like that comes
yes,
up, because she's always got the answers.
Solution-oriented.
What's been your favorite set that you've played so far aboard the boat?
Oh, I mean, I don't really have favorites of that, because for me, it's always a work in progress. You're
okay.
always just trying to do your best. And
what are some of the sets you've played so far?
Oh,
let's go that
I played a couple with Garage Artois. I played a thing with Eric Benny Bloom. And I did a thing with Kevin Scott the other night. It was all fun.
Yeah, bassist Kevin Scott was holding it down in the Jazz Lounge, which is kind of like the jam room with a more jazzy tint. And how long were you up there with him
for? I don't know, 3 or 4 tunes or something.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And have you caught much music of other artists?
Oh, yeah. I really loved Dumpster Funk, and I really loved Corey Wong. Really, really great.
Incredible.
And, and Tank and the Bangers was great. I saw them. I'm trying to think. Well, you know, because you kind of get scheduled, you don't get a chance to see as much stuff as you want. But I'm a big fan of Too Many Zoos, so I'm hoping to see them after I finish my set tonight.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. And your set tonight, what's the format going to be?
I don't know. I'm just going to play a few solo tunes, and hopefully friends of mine will come and join me.
Very cool. Yeah. Excellent. And the topic that we're doing today is musical mentors. Charlie, when did you first pick up an instrument, and which instrument was it?
Oh, I was about 12 and I started playing drums, and then I started playing guitar after that. I grew up in a very guitar centric area, Berkeley, California.
Okay.
In the 70s, and I had I just had so many great people around me that played really well, that it was hard not to learn, you know. So yeah.
And did your mom repair guitars?
Yes, she repaired guitars. She worked in two guitar shops about a mile apart from each other. Secondhand guitars and Subway guitars. Subway guitars is still there. Secondhand guitars is not around, but back in the day, Joe Satriani was the teacher in secondhand guitars.
Right.
So everyone in town took from him. And Subway guitars, either one of those stores you could go to. If you saw someone playing the night before, like you wanted to see Ry Cooder, well, you just go into the guitar store, because most of the time they'd show up.
Oh, right. Oh, man.
Clarence Gate Mouth Brown, you know. I mean, you just go, list goes on and on. Really cool musicians you could see there. You know.
Amazing. And talking about Joe Satriani, did you actually take lessons from
Absolutely,
Joe?
Yeah. Everyone in Berkeley, in Oakland, in the East Bay did. Everybody took lessons from him, you know.
And would you consider him a mentor in those
Absolutely. When I was a young guy, I didn't have a lot of direction, and he really helped me out and got a really instilled, concept of diligence and practice, you know, to me, you know.
And this was before he had kind of started
long before.
Those hits.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah. This was many years before.
So it must have been cool to watch his rise in the music industry.
Yeah, yeah. And I talked to him recently. He's still a really good dude, you know.
Awesome. And
The work ethic he instilled in all of us in terms of how to, and I still to this day, I try to practice 3-4 hours a day, you know.
And at when did you transfer over to guitar from drums?
Oh, they kind of were similar. I played them both at the same time for a while. And then by the time I was 15, I was just pretty much playing guitar.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
And how did the whole going to an 8-string guitar come about?
Well, I was a street musician in Europe for about 3 years in the 80s, and I was really into Joe Pass and Tuck Andrus and people like that that were doing this, you know, kind of sophisticated, counterpoint on 6-string guitar, and I wanted to expand on that a little bit. And when I got back to the Bay Area in about 1989, I had a old funky arch top at Subway turned into a 7-string guitar, and I experimented with that with a low A on it. And my first record on Les Claypool's label was
Prawn Song.
With that, yeah, with that guitar. And then I expanded. I met this guy Ralph Novak, and we made this 8-string guitar that was really like the lower 3 of a bass and the top 5 of a guitar. And I did a bunch of records on that. And then I switched to a 7-string with a different tuning. And now I'm playing an even different instrument. I call it a big 6, and it's like a truck, you know, really heavy strings and high action. And because it only has 3 guitar strings on the top, it makes me really think about what I'm going to play. So the counterpoint becomes more important than the amount of shit you're playing.
Yeah, of course. And I love that quite often you'll play both bass parts and guitar parts. When it comes to bass, is there a specific influence that stands out in terms of that part of your musicality?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I played bass as well, regular bass. I played some acoustic bass when I was a street musician. And I mean, just, you know, really, I guess, like a lot of the guiding lights, you know, go back to people like Milt Hinton.
Okay.
You know, Ray Brown, you know, Ron Carter, and learning those kinds of bass lines, and James Jamerson, and, you know, any of the old, you know, Bob Babbitt, any of that kind of stuff that I felt like is really important to learn. And then lots of organists.
Yeah.
Larry Young, you know, Jimmy Smith. Big John Patton, that kind of stuff as well, you know.
And took that and adapted it to.
Yeah, and my bass thing is pretty simple, just trying to keep time well and make it feel good.
Right.
You know?
Was it a long process going from once you got that 7-string to both playing bass and the guitar parts at the same time?
I mean, I guess, but the thing is, I had so many gigs that I just was thrown into the fire and had to learn on the job, you know, and there's nothing better than that. Because you can't get bogged down in the theoretics where you're trying to execute something. You got to actually learn, like, applicable skills, you know.
And it's like the Malcolm Gladwell thing, 10,000 hours
become absolutely. A great book, Outliers. Yeah. So it's the same thing. And, you know, I played with a lot of great musicians, and I was able to kind of get my ass kicked a lot. And, you know, that very helpful, you know.
What was the first tour you ever did?
Oh, I mean, first tour? I mean, when I was a kid, I lived on a school bus and we traveled around America. I mean, that's, you know, the first tour, you know. I mean, I lived on a school bus for 4 or 5 years, so it hasn't really ever stopped, you know, since then, you know.
And, you know, some of the groups that you were in, T.J. Kirk, how did that band come together?
Well, myself and Scott Amendola, John Schott and Will Bernard, we just hung out all the time. You know, talk about music, and then let's just put a band together as a joke and see what happens, just because we're hanging out so much. So we did that, and it was fun. I learned a lot from those guys.
And the repertoire for that was songs by
Thelonious Monk, James Brown, and Roland Kirk.
Very cool. And when was the last time you guys played that?
Oh, boy. Why, a long time ago.
And I was talking to you off mic before about how one of the most influential albums for me as a music fan and also as a bassist was when you covered a whole Bob Marley album.
Right. And Natty Dread record.
Exactly. Yeah. And how did that whole concept come about?
Well, at the time, Blue Note Records wanted to do this cover series where they had a bunch of different artists do their version of a kind of famous album. And Bruce Lundvall, Tom Everett, they were always really loose with us. So just say, yeah, just pick whatever the hell you want and do it. You know, it's not going to count as one of your records on the deal. It pays a lot less money, but we just want to get a bunch of these in the kind of in
catalog.
The catalog. Thank you. And so we just really honestly, man, we arranged and recorded that record in probably 3 days.
That is
very
nuts.
Little. Oh yeah, very little. We didn't take it very seriously. We're just like, all right, what do you got for this tune? Okay, cool. Write the arrangement. All right, we're good. Next. And then we toured that thing for a year because it kind of took off.
Yeah.
You know. And it was fun. I mean, it was really fun. We just took it as like, all right, this is a challenge here. Let's see what happens. You know.
Still play any of those songs in projects?
No. I won't play any of those songs.
Right.
No, because I mean, I think it's important to really retire stuff, but also one of the guys in that band, he passed away, so we don't do that music anymore.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And how did that become your choice? Was it clear pretty quickly after they asked you?
Well, yeah, no, not really. We thought of other albums, but we realized that was really a good record because his material is so strong, it can withstand a beating and still come out the other end as one of his songs.
All right.
And it's interesting, we did that record and the jazz people roundly hated it, but I got like a call from Chynna Smith and he said, oh, you know, people in Jamaica really like that record, I want you to know, because you're not Americans trying to play reggae.
Right.
And he said, thank you for that. I said, my pleasure, you know, my pleasure.
Now, when it comes to the business side of the music industry, who were some mentors that helped guide you from the pitfalls of...
Well, I mean, it's a rough business, and it hasn't changed a lot. I mean, a lot of the parameters have changed, and a lot of the, you know, delivery systems have changed. But really, it's ultimately the same business. The farther you are from the music, the more money you're going to make.
Sure.
You think about Spotify, and on balance, I think what those people think they're trying to do is really even-handed and fair and get music to the most people. But because and it has been since the dawn of any, you know, sheet music even technology in the, you know, early, late part of the 19th century, it has all of the accounting and all of the business itself, it always defaults to the people at the top of the food chain.
Right.
So if you're a musician, you're going to get paid last. And that's still the same thing. You're going to get paid last. You're going to be at the end of the day. People that are just being hired out of college to work at Spotify are going to make more money than you'll ever make. And it's just, it's the same. It's no different. But, you know, it's a calling. You don't get into this because you think you're going to make a lot of money. It's because it's a calling. You have an affinity for it, and you ultimately have a responsibility to carry this narrative forward that you got from the generation before you, they got from the generation before them, et cetera, and so on and so on. And, you know, the Spotify will be gone, and there will be another kind of profiteer to take its place. They won't be horrible people with bad intentions, but it's just the way that it all kind of plays out. You know,
right.
The musician will always be paid last.
That's
you know, and so playing live music where you have a chance to at least get paid third is a good way for musicians to make a living, you know. But in terms of mentors, I don't want to say I had mentors, but I definitely had people that I learned a lot from in terms of how the business kind of works. But, you know, it's mostly having these experiences in different periods. Being a younger guy playing with a lot older people, telling you how stuff goes down.
Okay.
Then later on, being a guy who's playing with his peers and figuring how stuff goes down. And then being on a thing like Blue Note Record or Warner Records where you kind of see how that stuff works firsthand. And then, you know, dealing with all of the rest of how it works. I mean, it's generally a similar class of people that are making all the money and the musicians that basically are not.
Right.
You know, and it hasn't changed very much. Although, I prefer this era because we have more of an ability to do things on our own, and we don't have to dedicate as much of our time to the minutiae.
Yes, you know, and gets focused on the art.
Exactly. Yeah.
Excellent. And you know, musical mentors. How about in terms of, on the other side of it? You have now been such an influential guitar player. Do you ever talk to younger musicians ever come to you to talk about either music or the business side of the music?
Sure, sure, of course. You know, and I do everything I can to help because I just feel like I'm just part of a continuum. I'm no big deal. I'm just another guy that was lucky enough to be able to wake up and practice 4 hours a day or whatever it is. And I feel lucky that I have that chance. And so I want to share whatever I've learned with people, younger people, that because they need to know that. So absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's an important part of it. And it just
for
all,
sure,
as
sure.
you said, a continuum.
Yeah.
And so, Charlie, what kind of plans do you have for 2020 musically?
Well, I'm about going to make another studio record with my friend Lucy Woodward, singer. We have a cool little group. Lucy and Doug Belote on drums, and we have a couple guests on it. So I'll be touring that a lot. You know, we're going to do some of this Garage Artois stuff coming up in 2020 as well. So, and then tons and tons of other things. I live in Greensboro, North Carolina now, and I'm trying to spend as much time as I can helping some of the young artists there to realize their musical projects, you know.
Very
so
cool.
When I'm at home, that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm also booking a space there and kind of...
What's it called?
On the One Music.
Okay.
And I'm tangentially involved with the folk festival, and I'm just trying... And I also have this guitar. I'm building these hybrid guitars now. I'm not building them. I can't build Jack, but I'm involved with the company, and there's three of us doing it out of Hillsborough, North Carolina. So, you know, just trying to do all of these different things.
And at what point did you move to Greensboro?
About a year and a half ago.
Okay, and that's going
yeah,
well?
I love it. I love it, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, we're very excited for everything, and we will give our readers and listeners the details on the Garage Artois album as soon as it's announced. And Charlie, we really thank you for your time.
Thank you for yours. I appreciate it.
All right, we've reached the end of this episode of the Jambase podcast. Thanks to Charlie for taking the time to chat with us. Stay tuned for a new album from Garage Artois coming soon from Royal Potato Family. Check out the nonprofit DanceSafe at dancesafe.org to donate or learn more. Thanks to our microphone supplier Telefunken for making us sound so good, and to Jake Alexander for the production assistance helping us to sound even better. That's Jake's band Clangin' and Bangin' you hear playing right now. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Jambase podcast. And if you like what you hear, give us 5 stars, leave a review, tell your friends. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, take care of each other. Go see live music.